Hello, mother there. I hope you are well.
Noah Baumbach's latest film, The Squid and the Whale, is a hilarious semi-autobiographical satire about the disintegration of his parents' marriage. It stars Jeff Daniels and Laura Linney as a literary Park Slope couple whose angry breakup has put their two precocious sons into the uncomfortable joint custody position of having to choose their allegiances and living quarters. The film, which opens this Wednesday at the Lincoln Plaza and the Angelica, has received rave reviews, and I'm very pleased to say brings writer-director Noah Baumbach to my show now. Hello.
Hi, thanks.
I understand that you've wanted to make a movie along these lines for a while, but I had a hard time figuring out how to do it.
Yeah, I think it's sort of, you know, one of those things. I think I always thought someday I'll be ready to make this movie. And
because it was so personal, was that part of the problem?
I think so. And I think in some ways, even for me, even writing as sort of nakedly and raw as I did this movie, I think, you know, I just wasn't ready to do it until I was a certain age. You know, I was in my 20s, I think I was, you know, too controlled.
Well, you made a number of films since and have written others. Mm-hmm. But what finally got you going on this one?
Well, I think it's something, in a way, if I had been conscious of it at the time, I probably wouldn't have done it. But I turned 30, and I, like you said, I had made two movies, and I found myself sort of suddenly writing first about older sort of adults dealing with their divorce in retrospect, and then I just had this sort of sudden shift, I don't know, some tectonic shift in my head where I thought I should really just be writing about the kids experiencing this firsthand. And I think, you know, it seems obvious now, but at the time it was a kind of really major shift for me, and I suddenly, you know, found myself writing this story.
Well, the kids are the ones who are really caught in any kind of a divorce. Often the parents can handle it better. This is a very funny film, although it's kind of a comedy of humiliation. I know I found myself squirming when I saw things that I recognized in my life and others, but it probably didn't feel all that funny when you were living through it.
Not when I was living through it, although I think when I was writing it, I thought I was writing a comedy. And, you know, and to some degree, I still feel like I did make a comedy. I not that you have to pick one or the other, but I think, you know, probably it's my own defense. I sort of think I'm writing something funny, and then it turns out much sadder.
Well, this is very different from a comedy you co-wrote with Wes Anderson, the Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. Wes directed that film. Is that right? Why that turned out to be so different, so much more whimsical and less nasty?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Wes has his, you know, sort of, I mean, Wes is such a distinct director, and so everything Wes makes is going to be, you know, which I love, is going to be so, you know, distinctly through him. And
well, you should love it. He's your producer.
Yes, I know, and we're good friends. And, but, you know, I mean, this movie is so filtered through me, you know, it sort of somehow represents me. And that movie, you know, really my role was to, you know, contribute to his world in a way. And on this one, his role really was to contribute to mine.
You say this is much about you, and a lot has been written about just how much this is based on the actual circumstances of your parents' divorce. So which word is more accurate? Autobiographical, semi-autobiographical, or just inspired by?
I would go for C, inspired by.
You've changed things a lot. But on the other hand, you did, I gather, have Jeff Daniels wear your father's clothes in the film, and you had your mother's books as
right.
as part of the props.
Well, and I think that can be sort of misconstrued as, you know, me trying to sort of recreate down, you know, exactly my life. And for me, it's much more about bringing sort of, you know, items from my life that connect me emotionally to the material. It's something I kind of learned through the whole process, both of writing and directing, that anything I could do to put myself on some emotional level, connect myself to that time in my life would, I think, help focus me.
Was that why you actually shot it in Park Slope? Because you could have shot it anywhere and said it was Park Slope.
That's true. Yes, it is. It is, you know, and also, you know, Park Slope is distinct, and but
Toronto doesn't fit in well.
Well, fortunately, we never went to Toronto, so I don't even know. But you know, yeah, I mean, I think it was important for me to be as much as possible in the real places and have the real things. But in a way, that's what allows, I think, for me, the fiction to feel more inspired. It's like if I can surround myself with these comfortable, familiar, you know, items or feelings, I can then invent more freely.
But Park Slope as a set is something that actually is part of your own personal history, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't your kitchen when you were young used as by Mike Nichols in Heartburn?
Yeah, and so it was one of the rare times you can say to a production designer, rent Heartburn, not only for the 80s styles, but also for the kitchen. That's my exact kitchen.
Did you have to go back to that film to remind yourself?
Yeah, well, it was a strange, you know, it's like looking at, you know, an interesting experience looking at Heartburn, you know, feeling like it's maybe a semi-home movie.
But were you aware of what was going on at the time? Did you already have aspirations to get involved with film?
Oh, yeah, I was thrilled to, at that point in my life, having a movie shot in my house was the equivalent of making a movie myself. I felt like, you know, we were all contributing to the making of Heartburn by supplying the kitchen.
The father here, Bernard, is played wonderfully by Jeff Daniels. I was trying to think of how to describe him, and I came up with shamelessly self-pitying, extremely competitive, pompously self-absorbed, self-important, a cheapskate. Is that a fair description?
And I would say, and ultimately sympathetic.
Yeah, well, that I wanted to get to. We can't help sympathizing with him on some level, no matter what he does. At one point, he identifies Kafka as one of my predecessors.
Right.
These are wincing kinds of things, aren't they?
Yeah, but, you know,
Why do you think he remains sympathetic on some level? Because of his inherent decency, perhaps?
I think so. And I think that, you know, for all the extremes maybe that Bernard goes to in a certain kind of sort of self-denial or self-protection, I think for me anyway, I really, you know, feel for someone who is so protected, someone who is so afraid of showing vulnerability, showing, you know, letting loose, feeling emotional. You know, I think, you know, someone who needs adulation from the people around him so badly, but at the same time wants to be taken care of so badly. And I think that for me always was a very moving aspect of Bernard.
And he has serious problems because he was once a published author, but no more.
Right.
You get the feeling that his artistic seriousness is actually one of the things that turns people off.
Well, yeah, and you know, and that's another aspect I find, you know, touching about him is that he, you know, I think he's searching so you know, it's sort of a massive search of what happened, you know, I mean, and instead of maybe looking further into himself for the reason, he's just blaming and shutting people out. And I think, you know, that's, you know, it's sad, you know, it's also funny.
My guest is Noah Baumbach, who has written and directed The Squid and the Whale, which opens this Wednesday at the Lincoln Plaza and the Angelica, and then opens this Friday in the neighborhood at
yes,
the Pavilion Theater.
Goes to Park Slope.
Right to Park Slope for the people who remember when their neighborhood was a set. What bothered me most about Bernard was that he commits one of the worst crimes that can be perpetrated in a divorce. He encourages the kids to choose sides.
Mm-hmm.
And he reveals quite personal things about what went wrong with the marriage. Now, this is not a unique thing, but it's always terrible.
Yeah, and I think when I first was writing the script, I really did come at it, as you mentioned, I came at it really from the kids' perspective, and you know, I felt a lot of anger on the, you know, from on the kids' behalf. I think when I reapproached it in later drafts from the parents' perspective, you know, even though I don't necessarily feel like that's the best way to handle it, I felt for him because I felt that he, you know, he had no one else to sort of talk to, and in a way, you know, he's using the kids as surrogates, you know, for, you know, the wife he no longer has, and
without thinking about how it's going to trouble them the rest of their lives.
Exactly. I mean, it's a very selfish, but I also think, you know, somewhat understandable, you know, given his limitations.
And the oldest son, Walt, played wonderfully by Jesse Eisenberg, sides with him completely at first.
Right. Well, because Joan, you know, in Jesse's or Walt's eyes, you know, is the one who's caused the divorce. I mean, she's the one who, you know, sort of on record is saying she doesn't want to be married anymore. And Bernard does.
And then he learns from his father that she's had an affair as well.
Right, right. So it becomes easy to blame her, and, you know, in that moment.
But he's also very much assumed his father's self-importance. He's always expressing his father's literary opinions. We know that they can't be his. And at one point, he tries to impress a classmate by characterizing the Metamorphosis, which he's never read, as very Kafkaesque. I was wondering, which one of the brothers were you? Was that you?
Well, I think I'm in both of them, but the very Kafkaesque was me at that time.
Well, it's nice that you can laugh at yourself.
Yeah, I kind of took myself to task a bit there, I think.
And the younger brother, Frank, is still a kid. He identifies more with their mother. And the Laura Linney character, wonderful performance as well. At the beginning, we're not sure what we feel about her, but we do come to sympathize with her as it goes on. She seems like the more mature parent of the two.
Well, I think, you know, in some ways for both the parents, what was interesting to me was, you know, because we kind of come into this initially from the kid's perspective, although I think the movie then becomes sort of everybody's perspective at some point, that the parents... Yeah, they do. You do change. I think that it's, you know, that it's a movie designed for you to shift allegiances yourself as you're watching it, and ultimately, you know, maybe find, you know, you might find yourself like the kids, encouraged to take sides, you know, depending on what you're bringing into it or your own life, you know, what's going on in the movie itself. But I think, you know, hopefully, you know, I think by the end you kind of can see everybody's side at least at some point.
Well, the situation gets more complicated when Joan, the mother, publishes a story in The New Yorker, and also when she takes up with Frank's tennis instructor, played by William Baldwin. Then the father's most provocative student, played by Anna Paquin, moves into his spare room in the place he's moved to, usually ominously referred to as on the other side of Prospect Park. I'm assuming that's Windsor Terrace or Ditmas Park.
Yeah.
You didn't want to get specific.
Well, I
insult people.
It was even more from. I remember even, you know, when I was a kid and my father did move to the other side of the park. There was some. Nobody quite knew what the neighborhood was called, because there was Windsor Terrace, there was Ditmas Park, there was Prospect South, and so in a way that was even less me being cagey about the neighborhood and more even the legitimate confusion over what it was called.
Have your parents seen this film?
Yes, they've now seen it a few times.
Mm-hmm. Are they then asked to explain themselves, or just say, "I'm so proud of my son"?
I think they feel proud of me. I mean, I think, you know, I think the first time they saw it, there must have been sort of a feeling of watching it like with your foot on the brakes, you know, because they didn't know what to expect. But I think once they got that first experience over with, they were able to really see it as a movie.
What about your brother?
My brother, I actually showed early drafts to, was very much, you know, I mean, he and I are very close, so I always show him stuff, and, you know, I'm sure it's complicated for him too, but I always feel compelled to point out that he did not do some of the things that Frank, the more extreme things that Frank does in the movie.
Now, Frank, Jesse Eisenberg has already been in other films. Has Frank? The guy who's playing Frank? Owen Klein?
Owen Klein played, his parents are Kevin Klein and Phoebe Cates, and he plays their son in The Anniversary Party, which actually my wife, Jennifer Jason Leigh, directed.
And I gather that you talked about the kids, you brought home audition tapes to show her. At the time, you said, to show my girlfriend without identifying her. Now it's out of the bag because you just married Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yeah, that was about 4 weeks ago.
And she thought that Owen Klein would be perfect for it, and he turns out to be.
Well, she was using him in some ways as a, you know, sort of gold standard of you need someone like Owen. And finally, you know, we had that conversation so many times that I felt, you know, we should at least try for the actual Owen and see if we can get him. And then also then I brought Owen in to audition because I knew Owen personally, but I didn't know him as an actor. So then I put him through his paces auditioning.
They always warn you not to use kids and animals in a movie. But I guess these kids are such so professional that you didn't really have to worry about that.
Well, the kids in the movie have to, you know, perform things that even for Jeff and Laura would be difficult. They're really emotional, you know, moments they have to, you know, reach and nuance that they have to sort of bring into every scene. So, I knew it would be difficult no matter what, but yeah, both of them are really special kids and also really terrific actors.
Doesn't your title allude to a diorama at the American Museum of Natural History known as the Clash of the Titans?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So did you see the War of the Divorcing Berkmans as a Clash of Titans?
I always sort of tried to stay somewhat naive of any kind of meaning of, you know, in the inherent in the title. I mean, you know, that said, I realize if you call the movie The Squid and the Whale, you're kind of provoking, some kind of, you know, symbolic reading. But for me, it really was the diorama meant a lot to me personally, and it means a lot to Walt in the movie. And so I, you know, sort of titled it that and then ran away.
Well, one critic has suggested that the movie's real struggle is between father and son.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I never thought of it as a divorce movie or, a Brooklyn movie or, even as a father-son movie. I kind of just, tried to sort of give all these characters their due in this sort of, you know, during this transition period in this environment and see what would happen. But, you know, I think at different points, the movie is sort of about different things.
This is, even though it has stars, it's pretty much a low budget film, isn't it, by today's standards?
By any standards. It was $1.5 million to make, and it was shot in 23 days. So it was very ambitious.
On 16 millimeter.
On Super 16, yeah.
Now, most people either shoot 35 millimeter or are going toward digital.
Mm-hmm.
Was 16 just less expensive, or were there other reasons?
No, I actually, at one point, we thought we might have more money, around $6 million to shoot the movie, and I had even planned then to shoot in Super 16 because it's a look I just felt was right for the movie. There's this sort of slight grain to it, which to me makes the movie feel old, but at the same time, it there's a kind of gritty, kind of immediate feel to it that I think makes the movie feel very present and immediate. So I it's that kind of contrast that I really like about it.
It also allowed you to shoot in places that you probably shouldn't have been shooting in. I gather you didn't get all the permits.
Yeah, we couldn't afford to shoot on the subway, so we snuck the camera onto the subway and with Jesse in some ways, some of my favorite shots are those kind of stolen. You know, I think they have the energy of kind of a guerrilla filmmaking. You know, which, you know, I wouldn't have done by design. If we could have afforded it, we would have done it the proper way.
What about the scene in the Museum of Natural History? Did you get permits there? Did you assume that they'd let you shoot a scene there when you were writing the script?
Well, I didn't think about it when I wrote it. I mean, it certainly crossed my mind, but I think I just sort of felt like, well, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Fortunately, they did give us, they did allow us to shoot there. That would not have been something we could have snuck into, particularly because it's too dark also. But that's one of those incredibly fortuitous things that happened on this movie, because if we hadn't gotten the museum, I really had no backup plan.
Film buffs will get a lot of laughs out of this, and others might not, although there are enough laughs to go around. There's this hilarious scene in which Walt takes his date to see Blue Velvet and his father tags along. Now, it's bad enough to bring a date, especially when you're a teenager, to Blue Velvet.
Yeah.
But for Dad to be there, that seemed totally inappropriate.
Yeah, yeah. That was actually inspired by a friend of mine who ended up seeing Blue Velvet with his grandmother. And I always found that very, must have been extremely uncomfortable. So I thought, well, you know, I didn't have a grandmother character in this, but, you know, that would be, a great movie for Bernard to, you know, watch with Sophie and Walt.
Considering the fact that your father had been a film critic for the Partisan Review and your mother was a much-loved critic at the Village Voice, was it possible for you to think of doing anything else but go into film?
Well, I maybe not. I think, in a way, though, what was different for me on this movie than my previous two movies, which was that I I sort of trusted a more emotional approach to the filmmaking, you know, and an emotional, you know, approach to the material than I had in the past. And I think, you know, in the past, I still was the son of critics, and I was coming at it from maybe a slightly more detached analytic perspective. And so in a way, you know, what was a great gift having critics in the family, because I was introduced to so many amazing movies, was also something I had to kind of shake a little.
Newsweek has called Noah Baumbach's The Squid and the Whale painfully funny, meticulously observed meditation on the dissolution of marriage. It opens Wednesday at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Angelica, and then on Friday at the Pavilion Theater on Prospect Park West and 15th Street, is it?
I think so.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Before I can settle down for this busy world.